Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR, LP 92.9 FM, Los Gatos, KMRT, LP 101.9 FM, Santa Cruz, KVBE, LP 91.1 FM, Portland. Yes, that Portland, online at kpcr.org. Signal Society title, Boardwalk, KPCR, thanks this Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk for supporting the Signal Society. Members save up to $30 on ride wristbands when purchased online. Join kpcr.org/join. When funding disappears, so do local voices. Donald Trump is once again threatening to eliminate federal funding for public and community radio. For stations like Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR 92.9 FM, and KMRT 101.9 FM, those cuts could mean fewer local programs, reduced emergency alerts, and less space for independent voices. We rely on this support to stay connected to you. Help us push back. Donate now at kpcr.org/join. Welcome. Today we're doing a fun little special here, Power of Protest, with Carla, Jeff, and George. I have them here in front of me, and I just wanted to do a little brief introduction on who you guys are and why you're here today. So do you want to start, George, or you just came in? We can start on this side if you want to go first, or Jeff.
George. My name's George Hoffman. Yeah. Years, but I came down from San Jose and been in the Bay Area since around 97, 96, originally from the East Coast, and find myself
with these guys by happenstance. Started doing Tesla takedown protests back in April when it was clear what Elon was about and how much damage he was doing, and met up with Jeff and Carla shortly after.
Hi. I'm Carla Albright. I've lived in Los Gatos about 30 years. I absolutely love this place. And on Trump 1.0, I basically kind of went into a bit of a depression. And one of the ways to feel better about everything was to take action. So I'm one of the co-founders of a Together We Will Indivisible Los Gatos group. And we've been active ever since, and that involves what we're currently doing, which is focusing on protesting.
Wonderful.
Thanks. And I'm Jeff Policky. I came out here in 87, I guess, from Illinois. Originally, came out as a musician and ended up becoming a computer scientist after a series of master's degree and whatnot. So after 30 years, I'm retired, and this is my primary activity, I guess, not working at home. Basically echoing everything that Carla and George said, just the outrage of Trump 2.0 has prompted me to get out and start acting up.
Yeah, I think we can all feel that. Trump 1.1, the post-election depression a little. So I'm going to start here with Carla. Why are the protests important in today's political climate?
Thank you for asking. Protesting is so important. And there are many reasons for why it is important. It sends a message to those people in power of what are your values. And in this case, I'm not in agreement, as are really, truly the majority of our nation are not in agreement. And we want everyone who's not in agreement to stand up, be visible, and send that message. It also sends a message to others that they can join you, that it's easy to do. And in fact, it's fun. We really have a good time, and it feels really good to align your values with being visible.
1,000%. Yeah. So historically, protests have been critical to the advancement of causes and rights in our country. Can you give a few examples?
We've had, most in our country, social change comes about because there's some kind of a level of protest, and mm-hmm. it's responding to the people. And sometimes you need to be persistent and patient and long-suffering, and some things take a long haul. Mm-hmm. So probably the protest that I am so more proud of and feel is so impactful would be the civil rights protests. And that started, you know, almost 100 years before or more, before it gained traction back in the 50s, where it started with Brown versus Board of Education. And so we desegregated schools. Then that led to the Montgomery bus boycott. That was in 1955, inspired by Rosa Parks. And by 1963, there was the March on DC, mm-hmm. which was involving 250,000 people. About a quarter of them were white, three quarters of them were black. It is also notable for Martin Luther King's famous speech, "I've Got a Dream." And then 2 years later were the Selma marches. And that same year, we got the Civil Rights Act.
Right.
And that was a very powerful act that ensured the rights for not just Black Americans, which were desperately in need of, but it protected the rights of so many people in our country.
Absolutely.
It sort of bears mentioning, maybe, I think, mm-hmm. that, I mean, with Tesla Takedown in particular, but protest in general, it's not just a national phenomenon, but international as well.
Totally.
And, I mean, Carla has her favorites, I know, but I'll briefly mention the Solidarity Movement and the removal of Marcos from office. And, you know, of course, at the beginning of our country, before there was a country, mm-hmm. I mean, there's the protests against the Stamp Act, the Coercive Acts, Townsend Acts, all these things that people got out in the streets and protested. And it dates back even further than that, to Rome, like 500 BC. People were out protesting. The plebs left town and said, "You guys take care of it yourself." Right? Yeah. I mean,
I think at some point people need their voices to be heard.
To be heard.
Yeah.
It's been a need throughout history.
It's a need. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. So now I want to go into, like, why is it so important that we peacefully protest?
Oh, being nonviolent is super, super important. For one, their studies have shown that they're twice as effective in achieving one's goals. And if you think about it, like, there are a lot of people that maybe want to protest the Trump regime, but if the protest is violent, they might not feel comfortable, that it's not their value, or they might not feel safe. So it allows for more people to be involved. Additionally, Trump is itching to have an excuse to do something like invoke the Insurrection Act, mm-hmm. and do what he's doing in some of the other cities like Chicago and Portland. And so it's really important to not give him that excuse and to allow him to be more imaginary and make things up, because when they're going on there in Portland, which I just love Portland's example, where they're saying how there's so much violence going on and all. And yet there are lots of videos out there showing a dance party. After the threats that Trump gave, the numbers increased, the dance party began, and they did the Macarena.
Yeah.
No violence there.
I mean, I feel like that's kind of a common theme. Like, they're telling us it's this crazy violent thing, and then you see and everybody's so loving and peaceful. Personally, I've been to many, and it's always like a really wonderful, beautiful experience. And so I totally agree. I have to turn you on really quick. You may want to try talking into Carla's mic, because I think something's going on with yours, okay. Which was that sound.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just wanted to mention, you know, there's an activist, an actor named Peter Coyote, who wrote an essay on this that I thought was really great. And the quote from that that I wanted to share is that something I keep in mind a lot when we're doing these things at Tesla Takedown, especially when, you know, when there's people going by and giving us the finger once in a while, you know, someone angry, you know, we always smile and wave back at them, you know. And the quote is, "A protest is an invitation to a better world." You know, it's a way of demonstrating the way you want the world to be. And, you know, no one wants to be in a world where they're getting yelled at or attacked. It's a way to demonstrate, you know, a better way of being, place, coming at it from a place of mutual respect and trying to meet people where they are, even if they're screaming in your face and being angry. It's not always easy, but I think it's very important.
I definitely can relate to, I was thinking that while you're saying it, you know, like even on a smaller scale, nobody likes to be yelled at, and anything calm is always going to get across, whether it, like if you're being yelled at, you're like, you get defensive. So I agree with that. Absolutely. So let's see. The next thing is, what exactly is the No Kings protest on October 18th about?
Sure. I mean, basically, the point is that the executive branch is overstepping at this point. And, you know, very simply, the purpose of the executive branch is to execute the laws enacted by Congress. Okay, and this is all about the rule of law, as opposed to rules by executive order, where 90% of the executive orders that have been, 97% of the executive orders that have been challenged have been judged to violate constitutional rights of ordinary Americans. This is not a normal situation. This is someone acting as a king, acting as a despot, acting as a dictator. There's also the clear impoundment violations of the Impoundment Control Act of 1974, where essentially the executive is usurping congressional authority. But not by not spending money that has been duly authorized by Congress. Again, this is not the function of the executive branch.
And I mean, there's such a deep tradition. It's at the core of the American nation, the American founding. You know that we don't accept kings here. If you had to boil down the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution to two words, you could do a lot worse than no kings.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what it's about. It's getting back to our roots as a country, as a nation, and as a people.
Absolutely. Okay, so.
Do we want to talk about the details of that?
Yeah, let's talk about the details. This ball is in your court. You guys are, I'm learning here too. So
the new No Kings rally is coming up on October 18th. It's actually the second one. And it is on track for being the largest nonviolent protest in our history in one day. It has over 2,200 scheduled events already.
Wonderful.
Back previously, the largest number scheduled was 1,400. So you will find scheduled events throughout the world, as well as in all 50 states. And it's on that Saturday. And we welcome everyone to come out, join us, get visible, feel good about yourself, join the music, and feel good about aligning your values and sending a message to people that you are not in support of. You can go to the nokings.org website and get more information. If you Google it, there'll be lots of avenues and ways for you to find protests. We're having one in Los Gatos. There's one in San Jose. And there's one, I think, a 14-miler going from Palo Alto to Sunnyvale.
That's beautiful. I do have to take a quick break to make a few announcements, and then we'll jump right back in. Local radio matters. This is your local station. No algorithms, no corporate playlists, just unique hand-built programming you won't find anywhere else, from ska and soul to climate news and queer culture. Pirate Cat Radio reflects the real Bay Area. Help us stay live and grow. Call 408-357-0330 and visit kpcr.org/join. Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR, 92.9 FM, and KMRT, 101.9 FM, thank the Youth Science Institute for inspiring the next generation of environmental stewards. YSI offers a hands-on science and nature education to Bay Area youth through school programs, summer camps, and outdoor learning in local parks. Explore science in the wild, learn more, or get involved at ysi-ca.org. All right, back into it. I love everything that we're talking about. Is there anything else you guys want to go over in regards to the No Kings protests? I've been personally myself. I went to the last one, and it was a really wonderful experience. Strength in numbers, and it does feel like you're doing something. We touched on the depression you feel sort of after everything that's gone on. It's sometimes hard not to. But when you're there, it does feel like it gives you some sort of purpose and you are doing something.
Yeah, I'll mention one thing that I really thought was really cool, actually, about the last one, about the last No Kings. you know, a lot of these, you know, the Women's March during Trump 1.0 and so on was really big, and there were, you know, there were a lot of people involved. But it was very centralized. You know, we went to San Jose, and there were, you know, 10,000 people in San Jose, and there were, you know, big thousands and thousands and thousands of people in big cities, right? It didn't happen like that with the first New Kings, and I don't think it's happening like that based on what Carla said about the numbers, 2,200 different protests across the country. These are, some of these are tiny little protests in tiny little towns. My wife actually went through and made a spreadsheet trying to count up all the participants, all the different protests, and how many participants in each of them. She was compiling media from these towns of like 200 people in the Midwest where like 50 people showed up to protest, right? And I think that's so, that's a change. That's a change, and I think it's a very positive change in how the country is responding. We're starting to understand that it's up to us and that we have to act at a local level and really get local support and build from that. So I think I'm hoping that this next No Kings is going to be even more in that direction. You know, you're going to see, you know, these 2,200, and obviously some of them are going to be in San Francisco and San Jose and New York City and everything. But there's also going to be, look for those guys that are in a town of 130 people and 25 people showed up to protest, right? I mean, that's a huge, huge number of people, of protests. That's a huge percentage of the town. So I think that's really encouraging.
Yeah, keeping with the local protest, I should mention that in Los Gatos, we'll be devoting the Tesla takedown protest that day to No Kings. And so that's on 10 to 12 on the 18th, 10 to 12 in the morning. And then follow up later in San Jose. If you don't have to register or anything, you can if you want. But that's, of course, at St. James Park. And that's from noon until 2. And the other thing,
we have to get a plug in for Tesla Takedown there, Jeff.
Yeah, I want to ask, what is Tesla Takedown?
Okay, before we go to it, if I may.
Yeah.
So there's another plug.
No problem.
So just to emphasize the point, these are peaceful protests. Mm-hmm. And so the Gandhi team has been particularly good about having a peace ambassadors be there. And so at this point, we have maybe 20 for an expected crowd over 10,000. So
if you might want to explain what the Gandhi team is.
The Gandhi team is basically people who are trained with de-escalation. So that if there are people on either side of the line getting excited, getting carried away, threatening violence or anything like that, to do everything we can to defuse the situation, get their needs heard, make sure they're understood, okay, and you know, be respectful, but also let the protest go on without anybody getting in any trouble. If you can get in touch with Joanna at the, what is the name of the organization again? Gandhi Peace Institute. Thank you. Okay. We need more people to come out for that.
Okay, wonderful.
It's also encouraging that, you know, if you're worried about coming out, just know that all the organizations putting these things together have dedicated forces that are there not to protest, but to keep the peace and to make sure everyone is safe.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, what is a Tesla takedown?
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about this, about Tesla takedown and how they started. So Tesla Takedown is a national movement, international movement, really, that started, after the inauguration. I think the key moment that really galvanized everyone and started the gears going was seeing Elon Musk at the Trump's inauguration giving a Nazi salute, not once but twice. It was very clear. There was no doubt in the mind of, I think, virtually anyone who saw it, and then there was cleanup that started happening on the right, but we all know what we saw, and it doesn't matter whether he's actually a Nazi or whether he's just playing with it for his own gain and his own power and wealth. It's true of a lot of these right-wing guys, but he also spent $100 million to get Trump elected, and this is a guy who for his whole career has claimed to be, on the side of saving the environment. He wants to save the planet from climate change. You know, he positioned himself as this techno-utopist. And I think a lot of us on the left, a lot of progressives, a lot of people who cared about the environment really believed what he was selling. And a lot of people went and bought Teslas and, with that in mind. And it was an enormous betrayal. I think it was a betrayal that of a different sort that you didn't really feel about Trump and these other guys who have always really been terrible, right? You never really thought that Trump ever had your best interests in mind.
No.
But with Elon, with Musk, it he did a heel turn and really threw everyone that has ever handed him money in the past under the bus. And obviously our institutions have completely failed to hold these guys, these criminals accountable. Trump primarily, but I mean, obviously Elon as well has gotten away with it. I'm sure Jeff will have a lot to say a little bit later about all the things that he's gotten away with, partially through, his Doge project in government. This is an opportunity, Tesla Takedown, to actually hold someone accountable in a way that we don't really have the opportunity to hold Trump accountable. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to wait for an election to hold a politician accountable, and we can have protests and so on, but there's not a lot of things we can do until then, legally. And so, but with Elon, he's uniquely vulnerable among all these right wing, oligarchs and fascists that are taking control of things. He's vulnerable because, number one, Tesla is still the main source of his wealth, even though he is so incredibly wealthy. A lot of that wealth is based on Tesla stock ownership, and a lot of that wealth has been leveraged so that he can buy other things and increase his power even more. And so if Tesla falls or the stock price drops below a certain point, Musk is in serious danger. He actually gets vastly disempowered. And the second point is that Tesla, unlike a lot of the empires that a lot of these other oligarchs have, sells a high price point product, a premium product, directly to consumers. So they sell cars. They sell cars to affluent, usually progressives. Mm-hmm. This is done untold damage to the Tesla brand, and our goal really is to complete that work and destroy the brand as much as possible up until the point when they decide that they want to be shed, they want to be rid of Musk and his odious Musk, and kick him to the curb and fire him.
Yeah.
And so that he no longer benefits from the money that you're giving to Tesla.
So you mentioned a word that we hear thrown around like fairly often, and I wanted to know if you could kind of define fascism for some people who may not know exactly what that means, because, you know, I think like we have this huge argument where they're like, it's not that, when it is so clearly that. I just think maybe hearing your take on that would be helpful to those listening.
Well, you know, I mean, I could just go through the list here, right? I just brought up 14 signs of fascism. Okay, let's walk through the list and see which ones qualify. Yeah. All right. Powerful and continuing nationalism. All right. I don't think we really have to go too deeply into that. Obviously, nationalist fervor is a big part of the MAGA movement.
Mm-hmm.
And even to the exclusion of all else, you know, America first, supposedly everything else can compound sand. Disdain for the recognition of human rights. Very clearly, we are now friends with dictators. We just sent $20 billion to Venezuela to prop up a dictatorship there. We have shut down all of our aid outreach around the world. I mean, we just have this administration, this regime has no respect for human rights. Even here in our own country, they're violating our rights as citizens every day with what they're doing with ICE.
Mm-hmm.
Identification of enemies or scapegoats as a unifying cause. Well, I think immigrants are pretty obviously the one that they've chosen. I think Democrats are the next target that they want to scapegoat, right?
Yep.
Supremacy of the military. I mean, he's bringing the military in to everywhere. He's bringing the military into the war-ravaged, wasteland of Portland,
Oregon.
I mean, I don't think we have to go. Obviously, we have Hegseth up there, pounding his chest in front of generals, telling them, they need to be manly and stop paying attention to, nation building. You break things and kill people for a living, he said. So,
yeah.
Rampant sexism. Oh my gosh! Do we really have to go through this list?
We don't have to go through the list.
Media. Let me just go through the list.
Yeah.
Rampant sexism, obviously. Mm-hmm. Control of mass media. Yes, he's doing so much to try to control and beat the mm-hmm. media down to do what to tell the stories he wants to say. Obsession with national security. Fear as a motivational tool by the government over the masses. I mean, obviously he's saying pounding the day, every day, you're going to, you know, there's crime. We need to knock it down. Religion and government are intertwined. Christian nationalism is a dominant force on the right. The evangelicals, 80% of evangelicals voted for Trump, and you see every single day that they are pushing back all of the separation of church and state. We have, I mean, there's just too many things to mention.
Yeah.
Corporate power is protected. Obviously, corporations, all of these oligarchs are going in and protecting all of their empires by kissing the ring. We say that every day. Mm-hmm. Labor power is being suppressed. Unions are being broken. Disdain for intellectuals in the arts. Every single college is being shaken down for money and to have Trump take over their curriculum and approve all of their programs. Obsession with crime and punishment. He's beating this every single day, sending the military in to try to get rid of crime that's not the military's job. They don't do a good job at it. There's not a lot of crime in Portland. Rampant cronyism and corruption. Oh my gosh, I don't even know. I mean, every single member of his cabinet pretty much is a billionaire.
Yeah.
And they are all just rubbing each other's backs and giving each other's, you know, one of the things that we came out of the Venezuela deal, the $20 billion we sent to Venezuela, mm-hmm. is that Scott Bessent, our Secretary of Treasury, has a lot of deals with companies that get a lot of money off of that. So yeah. he benefits directly from that. Mm-hmm. And then fraudulent elections.
Yeah.
I think
we can wrap that up. I think is
those are
all
the signs of fascism. So you make your own judgment.
Yeah, I mean, and also if you just look back in history, we were talking about that earlier. It's almost like a play by play of things that have already happened. So let's go back to Tesla and Elon Musk. There's been lots of news of deaths of drivers and passengers regarding Tesla. Can we kind of go over that quickly and?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll ask some more about that as well.
Yeah, to date, there have been 734 deaths recorded at a website, www.tesladeaths.org, and that same information is available on Wikipedia. And you might say, well, so what? You know, there have been over 35,000 auto traffic deaths per year since 2008. Why do we care about Tesla? Okay. And the point is that there's so many fewer Teslas, and yet there are so many deaths, okay? The fatality rate happens to be 5.6 fatalities per billion miles driven, compared to a national average of 2.8, okay? That's twice as many, okay? And if you go to that website, you can see for yourself that speed is recorded as being a factor in only 6 of those deaths.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a question of aggressive young drivers or, you know, guys with stock options going out and buying a Tesla
right.
and going for a joyride, okay? It's because of unsafe vehicles, right? Okay. This is a just overall problem here. We can go into further detail, and I'm sure we will, about Tesla in particular, but you basically have poor construction, poor design, a toxic work environment, and a CEO who regards government as an archaic institution. I mean, you just got a mess all the way, you know, from top to bottom in the organization. It's not just the CEO. It's the organization that he's built as well.
Mm-hmm. I know people who work at Tesla, and so it is exactly what they say it is. Yeah. You know,
yeah, it's a sweatshop.
It's awful.
Unmistakably.
Yeah,
Everyone's. There's a number of pieces you can particularly look at with the deaths. I mean, you can look at the self-driving vehicles. Mm-hmm. You can look at fires. There's the build quality, and there's other technical issues. But the one that everyone's familiar with by now, I think, is the self-driving.
Yeah,
Elon describes himself as being, quote, the boy who cried FSD, which is full self-driving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has been out there promoting that Tesla is full self-driving vehicle for the last 12 years,
mm-hmm.
Since 2008, since the Model S came out, which is just an outright lie. Okay.
Totally.
It's a long story here, but probably the best thing I point out is that Tesla is basically a class 2 a self-driving vehicle, which means that it requires driver supervision at all times.
Yeah.
Period. Okay. Most recently, a Florida jury in August awarded $243 million in punitive and compensatory damages to the plaintiff because Tesla advertise, or their advertising was that the vehicle was safe to drive without supervision. Okay, it led to the man's death. Okay, yeah. And he believed that he didn't need to supervise the vehicle because he thought it was safe. Okay, and it's worse than that. Even, you know, not only is there false advertising and a bad design or poor software, they go on to say what ultimately learned from this is that the vehicle itself, the onboard systems knew that it was about to run off the roadway, went through a stop sign, through a blinking red light, through a parked car, and through a pedestrian, mm-hmm. and yet did nothing other than shut itself off when the crash was unavoidable.
Right. I'm going to pause you there. I have to do a quick announcement, and then I want to continue this conversation. Pirate Cat Radio has your chance to see Pony Bradshaw with Thomas Sorba live at Felton Music Hall in Felton, California on Sunday. October 19th, we're giving away two pairs of tickets to our listeners. Enter now at kpcr.org/donate. Winners will be announced before the show. So I just want to quickly wrap this up and get some of your final thoughts. I do know while Musk was with Doge, personal data was collected on all of us. I want to know what your concerns, or like what our concerns should be about the use of these data, the data that they...
Sure. I mean, so this presumably goes beyond the $500 billion in lost IRS revenue and mm-hmm. closing government agencies and the 300,000 deaths caused by the cuts to USAID, mm-hmm. AID. Data was collected from all government agencies without regards for well-established interagency firewalls. The Privacy Act of 1974 guards against movement of data between the agencies, and the idea here is that Musk referred the Trump administration to Peter Thiel's Palantir to process the data into a single national database. And the fear here, obviously, and it's not just the fear, it's the intention, is that this can be used to target anyone in America at any time. And what might they do? Well, I mean, that's just cause, you know, some speculation, but we can look at what they've done already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And basically, it's been straight Project 2025. And we basically have political appointments up and down for all government agencies. Nothing happens without centralized approval. All spending and funding is going through the GSA and Treasury and IRS. And there's the broad view that unelected bureaucrats are anti-democratic because all federal employees must be supporters of Project 2025. So this, you know, started out with rumors, you know, where, you know, we have people, Doge in particular, gathering up data from Department of Homeland Security, from Social Security Administration, from United States Immigration and Naturalization Services. So they've got everything. I mean, it's IRS data, biometrics, voting rights, voting records, refugee, asylum, just everything. Okay. And then it was reported in May and confirmed in June of this year that Trump has tapped Palantir to compile data on Americans. Basically, there is a centralized data, and we look at a centralized data repository, an API, that you can find anything about anyone. Now, you can say, okay, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe government needs to be more efficient. Maybe computers are going to help, okay? What Palantir is in the business of doing is selling a predictive policing algorithm that catches criminals and terrorists, mm-hmm. okay? And this is, if you're not familiar with it, it's like the plot of the Minority Report. It's like
I am familiar.
You're tried for things you haven't done yet,
mm-hmm.
okay? So this is they'll have the capability to surveil not just terrorists but everyone. The CEO of Palantir, Alex Karp, advertises the company as making more America more lethal.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And Peter Thiel, the chairman, who is a well-known, you know, neo-feudalist, I mean, I can go into what that means in a bit, but he just plainly says, I no longer believe that freedom and democracy are compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's a great deal to be said about this, but it in terms of ideology, you can say that, I mean, there's this basically this idea of mimetic theory, mimesis theory, and Thiel subscribes to the beliefs of a man named Girard, who is an academic who is credited as being the godfather of the like button.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, basically the idea is that society exists by people copying each other.
Yeah,
this leads to rivalry, and which ultimately requires a scapegoat to be sacrificed to relieve the rivalry. So that's what the business of the database is to find the scapegoats.
Scary stuff.
I actually have something I wanted to add to that,
please,
which
do.
Is this is basically arguably the largest hack of personal data ever in the world. And when I got my first notice that I was hacked, you know, some organizations got hacked and my data was exposed, they told me to go to my credit agencies and put a freeze on them. So I've had a freeze on my credit agencies for a decade now. I think that that's even more important now. It is not going to protect everybody from identity fraud.
Right.
It will protect people from having, what do you call it, accounts made in their name where they didn't have it. So the three agencies that people should reach out to and put a freeze on are Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. My husband did it more recently, and it took him 1 hour.
That's good to know. That's good information. I know for, like, people in my group of, like, colleagues in school and everything, it does make you kind of uneasy and all the uncertainty. Like, you really just don't know, and it's so much information all the time. It's really hard to keep track of. So thank you so much for that. I do want to kind of go into the next and like ask each one of you, I understand people are protesting for multiple reasons. What themes or ideas do you guys see most represented?
Yeah, so I think there's so many individual issues. I mean, you can really take your pick. There's so many horrible things that these guys are doing, but it's really all the same fight. And we believe that at Tesla Takedown, you'll find, you know, at the core, you've got blatant criminality and corruption and refusal to obey the law and the Constitution. But everything else kind of flows from that. But people who come to Tesla Takedown, you know, there's every kind of sign you can think of. There's the Tesla and Musk focus things. Tesla funds fascism is the big banner that I bring. Doge stealing private data, destruction of the U.S. aid, AID, anti-ICE and supporting immigrants, the invasion of Portland and Chicago and sending, ordering state National Guards to invade one another, just absolute madness. And then there's local issues like Yes on 50 and Yes on Measure A. You know, we'll talk about those probably in a little bit. You know, but the everyone has their own issues. And, you know, there's one young man who was coming at some point during the summer. Every single time he came, he would hold up a sign that said, "Musk is poisoning Memphis." And this is an issue around Musk's company, XAI, which... he has a data center that he threw together in Memphis very quickly. And in order to power it, there's not enough power in Memphis for this thing. So he brought in, I think, something like 40 methane generators that just run 24/7 all the time, powering his data center completely illegally, completely against every local regulation. And it's poisoning, you know, Memphis and specifically traditionally, you know, a historically black part of the city. And this young black man would come and that was his issue. You know, it comes down to each. I've seen people with a whole range of things protesting everything, protesting just the entirety of everything that's going on down to, you know, there's this one issue that really connects with me and everything in between.
Right. Do you think like No Kings just covers all of that is what it sounds like? You know, there are so many things, like I said, it's hard to keep track of. So Carla, same question. Do you like have any take on that or?
I don't think that there's any one reason.
Yeah.
I think this regime has really attacked or impacted negatively a wide swath of people, and various different people have various personal issues, and we welcome everybody.
I think you're right. It feels very personal to many. We can all relate to something that's going on in some form of our life.
And so I just want to say that if you're not happy with anything of this Trump regime, that I encourage you all to come out, be visible, take action, and let others know that you're not okay with this.
Right. So this question is for George. How is a protest a form of accountability?
Yeah, so I think I talked about that earlier a little bit, the how it's one of the only ways we have to hold the people who are performing all these all this malfeasance accountable, right? And mm-hmm. I think you know, bleeding into kind of the next thing I want to talk about was about how it's really, you know, making consumer decisions mm-hmm. Is and using your buying power is, I think, a major way that we need to learn to protest. And we're not terribly good at it in this country. You know, elections are pretty rare, but we all vote with our wallets many times a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously one of the most disappointing things about Trump 2.0 is how quickly all these corporations have rolled over mm-hmm. for Trump. And that's because they don't really care about these values, these abstract values or democratic values or liberal values. They care about money and how much of yours they're going to get. But, you know, for the same reason, boycotts work. You know, you see what happened with Jimmy Kimmel and the boycott of Disney Plus and Hulu. Yeah. You see what happened with Target and how badly they were hit, their stock price and their bottom line was hit by their rolling over and just canceling all their DEI programs very quickly. Protests and boycotts can hold companies and their executives accountable for violating our trust, for violating, you know, values that we believe any American company should uphold. Making purchasing decisions that embody your values, though, isn't really always easy because a lot of us spend our time on a kind of glide path made for us by corporations, right? Yeah. A path of least resistance that kind of offers the illusion of choice in a lot of cases, mm-hmm. but few real choices as to who gets our money. You know, you're on a social media platform, and no matter what you do are doing on that platform, you're making the money just by having your eyeball glued to the screen. You know, yeah. Amazon Prime or Dash Pass or these subscription services, you know, you're... Companies love having that monthly revenue. They can count on you. They know they're not going to lose you. You know, you're not making any choices as to where to go next, right? Streaming subscriptions, the same thing. Default search engines, you know, using Google for everything instead of choosing an independent search engine. By the way, DuckDuckGo is quite a good alternative. Yeah. And the last thing any of these companies want is for you to start making choices, mm-hmm. actual choices. Subscription revenue is worth a lot more to them because they know that, well, that guy's not going anywhere. I don't have to worry about it, right? You want them worried. You want them having to worry about whether they can earn your money. And so it's kind of about becoming conscious of who's benefiting from your purchasing habits because it's often not you, and approaching each purchase with intentionality, which is something that takes a lot of effort when you've been, you know, stewing in this culture for a long time. I just wanted to add one. I think Jeff has something to say, but I want to add one quote, another quote by Scott Galloway, who's an NYU economics professor. You know, some of you might be familiar with Marx's quote of seize the means of production, right, which is the old communist kind of approach to thinking about how you fight back against, you know, the owner class, you know, labor fights against the owner class. But he was talking about how we need to think about it as seizing the means of consumption. You know, we are a consumption-based society, you know, very much about services. And so really having some, they have very, very deep control over the means of consumption. And they are convincing us every day to consume in ways that they want us to. And so it's about taking that control back.
To some extent with Tesla in particular, there's an opportunity, and I would go so far as to say a window of opportunity that exists today that may not exist in the future, because today's Tesla is still a B2C, it's selling directly to customers. They are famously or well reported to be trying to pivot to using their cyber taxis. When they start selling cyber taxis, they're going to be selling those to corporations. They're going to be selling those to governments. Okay, it's no longer a consumer-oriented business.
Right.
Okay, so we have this window of opportunity to get in there and make a difference while we can. To the good, most recently, Texas is already starting to look at the permissions that Tesla has given for auto driving in Austin. And a lot of cities are beginning to rescind the possibility of licensing Tesla to operate cyber taxis. So there's hope that that can be shut down, but we need to do this now before that gets set up.
Absolutely. I do need to interrupt to do a quick announcement quickly, but I did just want to quickly say this is why protesting is so important and boycotting and organizing, because we do all have to be on the same page to make a difference, I believe. And I'm just so glad that you guys came in
Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR 92.9 FM, and KMRT 101.9 FM are powered by volunteers who care about music, local stories, and independent voices. We are looking for dependable, community-minded people to help behind the mic at events or with station operations. Volunteering is a chance to build new skills, meet artists and DJs, and connect with your community. We welcome volunteers of all backgrounds and life experiences. What brings us together is a shared commitment to local radio. Interested in joining us? Visit kpcr.org/volunteer. Independent radio faces a real risk. Federal funding for community radio is under threat again. Donald Trump has renewed calls to eliminate support for public media. That puts non-commercial stations like Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR 92.9 FM, and KMRT 101.9 FM at risk. Without it, fewer voices will be heard and more stations will go dark. Help keep local radio alive. Go to kpcr.org/join and make your contribution today. All right. So we have about 15 minutes left, and I just want to kind of start, finishing up our statements. So do you guys, I have a few more questions. I think we want to go over something. I don't know. I don't. Did you? Okay. What if, you guys, where am I? I got like wrapped up in it.
I think there's a question. Yeah,
yeah, if a listener wants to take a stand but isn't comfortable with protesting, what can they do?
Yeah, when I saw this question, I think when we were talking about it earlier, my first reaction to it was, are you comfortable right now? Because because I'm not. Yeah. I'm sitting at home every day with my kids and my family and going out of my mind reading what's going on and seeing what's happening. And I don't think anyone should be comfortable with what's going on right now. And so I don't think it's a matter of like, I think we can probably be a lot more comfortable if we're living according to our values, if we're embodying them in some way. You know, I have a pretty strong sense of justice, and, you know, being able to go out and do something about what I see as a massive injustice, I think is pretty therapeutic. I think we progressives sometimes have a tendency to sort of fire and forget, elect someone that we think is competent, and then go back to our busy lives and maybe not pay that much attention and trust. We trust in systems, we trust in institutions, and we trust that the institutions are doing its job. But I don't know if it ever worked that way, but it doesn't seem to be working that well right now. And I think we really need to get more comfortable with this being a habit that we need to engage in and be consistent about it. But that said, I don't think protesting has to be uncomfortable or dangerous or even unpleasant. I think we have a lot of fun. We play music, we dance, we share a lot of great positive energy. We have a lot of joy. We have a lot of fun. We have a blow up saluting Elon that does his Nazi salute all the time. Like a tube man kind of thing. You know, I don't know if you've seen the stuff coming out of Portland recently, but it's currently full of frogs and unicorns dancing. And, that's the kind of energy that we're going for.
It is. I mean, I think also there's a lot of hope there. Like, everybody just wants a better life, you know. So I think that it is always a positive experience. Did you have anything to touch on?
Sure. There's a myriad of things that are possible for individuals. But the thing I keep coming back to when you asked was that, I'm out there on Wednesdays and Saturdays basically, you know, screaming at people, find your voice.
right.
Okay. Find your voice and use it. And of course, in the context of our protest on Los Gatos Boulevard, I mean, that means honking or waving or whatever it is you do there. But there are so many other things that any individual can do, like leafleting or tabling or writing postcards, talking with your friends, and above all, voting. Okay.
Vote. We've got a special 1,000%.
Special election coming up. So yes on A, yes on 50.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we just had a special on that yesterday. So I hope everybody tunes into that.
Just to the point of, I just want to mention, like, I think in a there's so many things that can be forms of protest. You know, in an environment that we're in this culture where your attention is so incredibly valuable to these companies. We live in the attention economy, and in such an environment, you know, it's an act of protest just to consciously take your attention back.
and make a decision about what you want to do with your time and with your energy.
Right.
So if that's all you can do, I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. You can.
I'd like to offer a few other points. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the topic of other ways to protest, the first thing is be aware. So get educated.
Right.
And then start talking. Talking literally to everybody. Mm-hmm. Not just your family and friends, but the cashier.
Yeah.
Just anybody that crosses your path. Get educated so you can speak, convincingly and intelligently. But also in this process, use humor, use ridicule. Mm-hmm. It takes away the power of the fear that might be involved in some people. And if you use social media, to use that to amplify your message, mm-hmm. there's a lot of power in social media. Right. I, for one, have chosen to exit, but not everybody's doing that. And that's something we should be using. Right. I love how George says to be conscious of your time and your money,
right.
because there's a lot of power in that. And we need to be joyful. They want us fearful. They want us scared and yeah. quiet and cowering.
In fact, I think that they thrive on it, yeah.
Yeah. So, additionally, I strongly encourage people to find a group. That group might be a Tesla Takedown where you meet every Saturday and they're your peeps. You can find a group like ours, Together We Will Indivisible Los Gatos. There's right. a gazillion indivisible groups out there.
Yeah.
You do not need to join our group, but find your peeps. Get your strength from knowing that there are other people like you.
Right.
So, and then I wanted to make a comment about being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So first off, we have seen at our protests people with walkers, people that are older, they can't stand, so they bring a chair yeah. and they sit down. We have actually had people come out in wheelchairs. So there are many ways to protest, and it doesn't mean loud and active and moving. And then another story, I met at a protest a woman who said, to George's point, I'm not comfortable with what's happening. I've got to do something.
Yeah.
So she is organizing our tabling at the farmer's market in Los Gatos every Sunday. But she has shared with me that she is uncomfortable. This is not her MO. She's probably an introvert. She doesn't like confrontation. Mm-hmm. This is uncomfortable to her. But we're 2.5 weeks into it, and I got an email from her about how excited she was about the movement going forward,
yeah.
about the impact that she is having, and the yes on Prop 50
right.
movement.
I can super relate to that. When everything was going on in January, I felt pretty helpless myself, and I got educated, and I found that when you find something that you feel really passionately about or that you can relate to, there's a place for you anywhere in that. There's a place for everybody in protesting, like you said, you don't have to be involved in this one, but there's many avenues, and something like just helping at the table is a form of protest. So there is a place for you if you need to find anything. We only have a few more minutes left here. I want to know how people can join a protest, how people can join your movement, and just going over those things.
Yeah, so the easiest ways are to go on mobilize.com and actionnetwork.com mm-hmm. and find protests that are near you. Those will include the Tesla Takedowns, the No Kings, and many, many other local events.
Right.
Including Together We Will advertising for, poster making events, writings, postcard writings. Mm-hmm. Everything is advertised there.
Wonderful.
So there's a place for you.
Perfect.
And even if you don't do the research, but you drive by or you ride your bike by and you see a protest happening, get out of your car, get off your bike. We've had both of those examples happen on our Tesla protest.
Mm-hmm. And it's so great. It's so great. We live for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you get people to learn. And I think I learned that we have to have a willingness to be wrong to learn anything. So I just think having an open mind, and that's so great that they just got off and hopped off. Any final, what outcome would you like to all see from all the activism? You guys are putting in a lot of work. I commend you for it. It's beautiful work that you're doing. So
I just want anyone who's not happy with what's happening in our country to get visible, to take action, to let others know you can too.
Right.
You know, a friend of mine actually wrote an essay about this, and I asked him if I could use it. You know, I think what I'd like for everyone to understand, everyone in this country, is that we're like Dorothy in Oz, and we have the ruby slippers right on our feet. Mm-hmm. The power is ours, right? We can take the power at any moment. We can click those heels together and go home. We just have to trust in each other that we're going to support each other through it, and take and get uncomfortable and make the leap.
Absolutely. I do. Any thoughts on that? I totally agree with you. I think that we do have to get really uncomfortable. Strength in numbers, as I said before, and I think that we're in a really high stakes environment where a lot of people are feeling really stressed out, and it is easy to shut down, but this is where we can't, and we have to keep pushing forward. This has been such a wonderful interview. I'm so glad that you guys came in today. Great, you're doing great work, and I hope to see you on October 18th. I will be there. So I already planned on that, but you know, I think, thank you so much, because I think a lot of it is that people just don't know what's going on, you know? And so, yeah, I'm so happy that you guys came. Thank you. If you guys want to say any. Yeah, thank you guys so much. I'm so happy you guys came in. Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR LP 92.9 FM, Los Gatos. KMRT LP 101.9 FM, Santa Cruz. KVBE LP 91.1 FM, Portland. Yes, that Portland. Online at kpcr.org. The Trump administration is once again threatening funding for public and community radio. Stations like Pirate Cat Radio survive because of listener support, not commercials. Help keep us independent, on air, and expanding. Call 408-357-0330 or donate at kpcr.org/join. Stand with community media. KPCR thanks the Bywater in Los Gatos for supporting the Signal Society. Members get 10% off their bill up to $100. Sign up at kpcr.org/join.